Hello, hello, and welcome once again to the Baseball America Hot Sheet podcast. I'm Josh in North Carolina. That's Jeff in Massachusetts. And for the first time, we have a special guest, Bill in Arizona. It's our own, or Baseball America's own, contributor extraordinaire, photographer, does two chapters in the handbook, roams the backfields and big fields in Arizona, Bill Mitchell. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hello, Josh and Jeff. I'm doing great. Good morning to everyone.
I'm just a little stunned right now because you're in Arizona where it is warm at best and hot at worst. And you look like you're in a sweatshirt, which is...
No, it's just a red t-shirt. That's all.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, oh my goodness.
I don't wear sweatshirts this time of year.
Oh yeah. Every so often when I'm in the backfield, I'll see guys wearing those long arm protector sleeves or sometimes even like pullovers. And it's like, are you guys crazy? It's really hot out. But I guess it does protect their skin. So last time we did this podcast, we talked about the Arizona Fall League. And this time we're going to talk more about the Arizona Fall League because it's just that darn cool. And we thought, who better to come on the podcast than Bill, who is out in Arizona. And I believe, if I'm right, Bill, has covered every Arizona Fall League since its inception.
I've been going to games there, either as a fan, a father taking his children, a freelance writer doing my own Fall League website, to covering it for Baseball America. Yes, since 1992, every season, except for the year we didn't have a season.
So you've seen them all, from Trout to Harper to Jordan to Tebow to Acuna to Guerrero to Betts to Bryant, everywhere in between. I'm sure I'm forgetting a ton of guys, but you've seen them all.
Oh, so, we can go back to Mike Piazza and Mark Grudzielanek.
Woof! I didn't realize.
And DeJuan Brazelton, there's a name for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't even know Piazza and Grudzielanek belonged in the same sentence either, but they're both pretty good. And DeJuan, you know, it doesn't really belong with those guys either. But yeah, you've seen a lot of games out there. And I guess I'll just start with the simple question. You know, that's 20, 30, that's 30. This is the 30th anniversary because you didn't have 1 year. What are your favorite memories from 30 years of the Fall League?
Oh, there's just so many. It's always been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it a lot. And I think back to the perhaps 1 year when the outfield for the Scottsdale Scorpions was Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and a couple of other notable guys. It's like, how do you put together an outfield like that? Major league teams don't have an outfield like that.
Yeah.
So that's a good memory. Just getting to know some of the players on a more casual basis, getting to know the fans that are there every year. And we do have our super fans at Fall League. So, being able to walk through the stands and just have it such an informal atmosphere. I've been watching great baseball.
Yeah, you mentioned the super fans. That wasn't on my note, but I know of at least two super fans. There's the Greatest in a Millions Universe's woman, and her name is escaping me right now. It's Bob.
Susan,
thank you. And Flag Woman, whose name I've never known, but she has the kind of the semaphore flags that she waves for whatever reason.
Her name is Cindy, and I just saw her the other week. She works at Chase Field, so she happened to be at when I was there for the Perfect Game All-American Classic.
Have you heard why the flags?
No, it's just her thing.
Well, it certainly stands out because you're right. There's not, you know, for games that have outfields that feature Trout and Harper at times, and, you know, they weren't anonymous then at all. Yet there's so very few fans at these games. There's a couple hundred, 200-300 if you're on a good day in a world where Tim Tebow isn't on one of the teams, in which case you get a couple thousand. So, you know, beyond all that, what do you think about this year's group of AFL players now that you've gotten to look at the preliminary rosters?
I think it's a younger group than in the past. And that's part of the way minor league baseball is going. We've eliminated a level of minor league ball. players are getting to double A faster, they're getting to triple A faster. And we're having people like Jordan Lawler, who was just drafted last year. We've got a couple of players that were just drafted this year in the league. So it used to be originally was triple A players ready to go to the big leagues with some double A players too. You very seldom saw any A ball players in the league. But now it's getting younger. And as long as they're prospects, hey, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, this year's got a lot of really interesting guys. And like you mentioned, there's at least two, I think, of 2022 draftees. And they're not even among the youngest in the group. Those would be the teenagers like Jason Dominguez, who will be out there. And I will be very interested to see what kind of crowds he draws for games at Mesa. And then there's Davison De Los Santos on the stacked Salt River Club. You know, I'll kick it to Jeff here. You know, you've had a little bit more time too to kind of look at the rosters, Jeff. What have you thought about the AFL crop this year after a few days to simmer? But last time we talked, it was only a couple hours after the rosters had come out.
Yeah, I don't think my perspective has changed a ton. And, you know, I think just having dealt with a similar league out here, of course, for college players in the Cape Cod League, I know these rosters are in flux, less so than the Cape Cod League, but there's still, you know, handfuls of players that maybe don't end up there or don't end up there for a long period of time. You know, I think the hitting, honestly, overall is really good. Again, that's where the stars are going to come from. You know, there's the couple of college draftees that are here, and Wisenhunt and Rocker, two guys that I saw actually early summer, late spring. That will be interesting, but I'm also kind of wondering how many innings they get. It's a really heavy reliever group again, which, you know, I think is some good and some bad. I don't know if the quality of pitching is going to be as good as maybe it was years ago. But I think this is kind of what the norm is, just based on what last year was like. And I think, you know, a couple of the previous seasons, but I can really only speak with firsthand experience to last year, because it was my first year out there. You know, there's going to be a lot of firepower though, coming out of these pens. I think that was one of the things that jumped out to me last year, is any game you go to, well, you may not see, you know, a future superstar starter type of deal. You will see some bullpen arms that could contribute to competing major league clubs as soon as, you know, 2023. And I think there's some interesting, just, you know, secondary pitches. You'll see a lot of good fastballs. You'll see some guys that can throw hard. So I think that's overall, just looking at the rosters, that kind of seems to be what the baseline construction has been of the AFL, at least the last couple of years. So, you know, a lot of high end bats, and then, you know, the pitching, it's sort of a hodgepodge mix of relievers and sort of those fringy starter types.
And I'll correct myself from my last podcast, our last podcast, where I said Quinn Priester was the only top 100 prospect going. Of course, I am wrong there. Tink Hentz is also going. That's two top 100 prospects. But the point is, Jeff, you know, even in just experiencing two, this will be two fall leagues for Jeff. And I think these will probably be the two lightest pitching crops. At least this will be my ninth. And last year was not very good in terms of pitching. This year doesn't appear to be much better. Bill, how, in your experience, how much of a decline has there been in the quality of pitching in the fall league in terms of star power and results sometimes?
It has been this way for quite some time, and it's because pitchers get shut down. Innings are managed a little closer than they used to be. You aren't getting your pitching prospects that pitched a full season. If they had 25 starts during the season, they're shut down. Maybe they come to Instructure League, get in random innings here and there in a very controlled environment where they can roll the innings. But what we get, and this has been going on for quite some time, is if you get a good pitching prospect, it's because they were hurt or for whatever reason, they missed a lot of time this year and they need extra innings. And that's what we always count on. We look at to see who didn't pitch much during the season and say, hey, maybe he'll come to the fall league. So, you know, it's been this way for a little while. And then we get the what I call the double A relief pitchers who, you know, are there to just burn innings. And, you know, you sometimes get a pop-up guy out of that. What I'm looking for is who's going to be this year's Wilmer Flores. And I'm not talking about the big league out infielder. It's the Detroit Tigers pitcher who pitched hardly at all in junior college. And his area scout, Joey Lothrop, from the Tigers, did a great job just finding him in a bullpen session at the Arizona Community College that he was going to. Now he's a top 100 prospect. And did any of us know anything about Wilmer Flores coming into last year's fall league? At least not much. So who's this year's Wilmer Flores?
Jeff, I'll send that to you. Who's this year's Wilmer Flores? Because you are, you know, in BA circles, the pitcher whisperer. Tell us, who is this year's Wilmer Flores?
Oof. I wish I was better prepared for this question, frankly. You know, I think when you look at it, it's hard for me to come up with one off the top of my head. If you come back to me in like 5 minutes, I might be able to figure this out quickly.
Are you telling me you don't, off the top of your head, know who the next breakout pitcher will be? Come on, Jeff. What do we pay you for?
Honestly, that's a good question. It's a good question. It's funny because, like, you know, you're looking for somebody who has potential like starter upside, and a lot of the guys that sort of like come to mind off the top of my head, like maybe like a Hagen Danner, for example, is like totally a reliever. There's like zero chance that guy's going to be, you know, a starter. And then you have other guys, you know, like Mason Miller, who I think is maybe the most interesting pitcher. I think I talked about him in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. In the fall league this year, just in terms of raw stuff. But he's a reliever. Like I don't really see him being, you know, a multi-inning guy. And, you know, I saw Flores a few weeks ago, and I mean, I think he got through six innings on like 75 pitches, you know, like he's really efficient. He's just such a starter. Despite, you know, maybe the pitch mix not necessarily being totally traditional. You know, I think he's a guy that is just a little different. So, you know, the name I'll throw out here, and I guess I'll go with my hometown bias a little bit, is Thad Ward. And I don't know if this is a cop out a little bit, because he was a name that did have some helium prior to the pandemic. He got injured, came back from Tommy John surgery this season, was back in Double A, pitched fairly well. He's a guy that's on the 40-man roster bubble, and decision needs to be made whether he's going to be protected or not. And, you know, I think that for Ward, he'd come out here and, you know, he didn't throw that many innings. He's probably had sort of his ramp up rehab period back. And there's a decision that needs to be made as to whether he's going to be protected or not, because he is sort of within that window that he could be somebody that an organization would take an opportunity to grab and say, hey, we could throw this guy in as a long man right away, you know, the Pirates, whoever it might be. And it's not going to be a drop off from whoever we're going to have in that role to begin with. And, you know, maybe he could develop into a starter. I really think he's probably the most interesting one. The other name that I'll throw out there, and we've talked about him quite a bit too, is Brian Wu from Seattle. Just really like the operation. It's a good pitch mix. He's got starter qualities. You know, could be a guy that I think gains some helium while he's out here. You know, I'm always going to stand for Emmett Sheehan, but I don't know if, you know, necessarily Sheehan is going to show anything in the fall league more so than what we've already seen. And I also kind of question how deep he's going to go into games. I would imagine the Dodgers are really going to limit the innings and how deep he goes. You know, it's going to be 2 to 3 inning appearances would be my assumption. But if I had to throw some names out there, those are some guys that maybe are less off the radar than Flores, but, you know, interesting players. Christian Chamberlain, another one I really like a lot, but Chamberlain's not going to start, you know. But I would probably put my money on Thad Ward, just because the situation he's in, he's shown the ability to sort of be a true starting pitching prospect as well. And, you know, I think having sort of those characteristics is really what you need to fall in line with what we've seen from Flores since.
Jeff, Jeff, I'm glad you brought up Mason Miller because he missed most of the season with the A's, but I was at his first game of the year. It was in Arizona League. Unfortunately, it was in a stadium instead of backfield and a stadium that was projecting velocities. And here's this guy who hadn't pitched all year. And we all get excited when we see triple digits up on the scoreboard with the velocity. And he was 100, 101. Somebody said they even saw 102. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah. I was going to bring him up as well because he was doing 101, 102, 100. A couple nights ago over the weekend in Vegas. And that was as interesting as it sounds. Yeah, you know, as Bill said, we all get excited when we see triple digits because it's, even though it's more common than it was 20 something years ago, it's still pretty darn cool.
And I think it's the guys that can pump it up to like 101, 102 with a breaking ball. And he's sort of like that. The guy that actually, I think this comp app previously, but he's kind of like, he's more like this year's like Gregory Santos, though the fastball quality might be a little bit better than Santos's was.
So we'll take this moment here to take a quick ad break. And we're back. And, you know, the last time we talked, Jeff and I went down the guys we're most excited to see. And they were some pretty obvious ones. Bill, since you don't get to see a whole lot of regular minor league baseball, that's the thing about Arizona. You've got all the complex, well, not all the complexes. Half the complexes, you've got the AZL, you got extended spring training, you got big league spring training, you got the fall league and the various amateur stuff, but you don't have any real, you know, full season minor league affiliates. So you don't get to see a lot of these guys once they graduate from the complex. Who are you most excited to see on these fall league rosters?
Well, the first name I'll mention, just because I do the Kansas City Royals prospect report and a monthly org report, I just recently interviewed Tyler Gentry, who a year ago was not even on their top 30. Outfielder out of Alabama, drafted in the 2020 season. He went back to high A because he had had a knee injury the year before, and he hit very well in high A. Clarifying that with some people, you know, he was a 23-year-old SEC product, and they, you know, so they minimized those accomplishments. But then he went to double A and he just kept hitting and hitting and hitting. And, you know, quite frankly, he's probably going to be pretty close to the top of their prospect list this year. So I'm looking forward to seeing Tyler Gentry. Two other players I want to see, because I cover, do a lot of the big high school showcases. Some of these players I haven't seen in 3 years. And thank you to the St. Louis organization for sending Jordan Walker and Tink Hentz, because it has been 3 years since I've seen those guys. And I want to see how they've matured, how their bodies have matured. And granted, yeah, I've seen Walker on TV in the Futures game, but he was one that caught my eye both at Area Codes and Perfect Game All-American in 2019. And I want to see what he looks like now. Tink Hentz, I remember seeing him in the 2019 Perfect Game World Series in Arizona. And Scout said, hey, you've got to go see this guy. Back then, he went by his first name, Markievicz. So we were all rushing out to see Markievicz Hentz. And I saw this not real tall, very slender kid throwing. I don't remember what his velocity was back then, but he caught everybody's eye. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he looks. One more name to throw in is Zach Geloff from the Oakland A's. Played the entire year, his first full season at double A, hitter out of Virginia. He was real good when I saw him in Instructs last year. I saw him in minor league spring training this year, and he looked good. And obviously he did well in double A. So I want to see how he handles fall league.
Yeah, those are the some of the names that Jeff and I came up with for obvious reasons. I think Hentz is right there with Yuri Perez for me on best pitchers I haven't seen at all. I don't really count TV. Jeff got to see Yuri Perez. Did you see Hentz this year in the backfield? I think he's
yes,
not
I saw. Year ago. I saw Hentz right at the end of spring training. But he was only throwing like a side session. I don't think I saw any game action, unfortunately.
We'll send that to our panel of judges to see if that counts. I mean, you've seen him. I don't know if that means that I've walked past. Well, before the recent series, I'd walked past Ellie De La Cruz. I don't know if that means I'd seen him. But yeah, Bill's list is very similar to ours. It's not a surprise that Salt River is, you know, where we've gotten a lot of our guys from. That is an extremely stacked team. I'll circle it back to you again, Bill. You know, we mentioned Harper and Trout. Is that the most stacked AFL club you've seen, or is there another one that you can remember that just was just talent on talent on talent?
Certainly it has to rank in the top five over the years. Besides you mentioned Davison De Los Santos before, Jordan Lawler is on that team. Zach Veen and several other Rockies stand out. So that will certainly be one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Warming Bernabelle is not one to miss. We got Addison Barger from the Blue Jays. He's really interesting. Colt Keith, we mentioned on the last podcast, was a guy who had some helium before he got hurt. And we didn't even talk about Mr. Infield Cannon himself, Mason Wynn. There's another guy that is going to be really interesting. That group, you know, beyond just going to Salt River Fields, that group is going to be a good reason to go to that beautiful park every night. And I'll segue that way. You know, there's six primary Arizona Fall League stadiums. Bill, pick a favorite.
You know what? I like the old school feel, some of them. I like Peoria Stadium. If we were going to branch out, then I'd put HoCam in there, but they don't use that for Fall League. I just like those stadiums. They just have a nice homey feel. It's easy to get around. The sight lines are good. From a photographer standpoint, the lights are good at both places. So I say that. I also like Surprise Stadium, even though it's the furthest one from my house. There's two good complexes out there. You can easily wander, and we may do this while you're here, Josh. We may wander out of the stadium briefly, walk to the Rangers or Royals backfields and catch a little Instrux action. We did that last year when all of a sudden we found out that an hour and a half after the Fall League started, there was going to be an Instructional League game with the Royals' top three pitching draft picks all going back to back to back. So those are some of my favorites. And then I'll throw in Sloan Park just because it's 5 minutes from my house and I can easily get there.
Yeah, it sounds like you and Jeff and myself are all going to be in the Sloan Park radius. Jeff, I'm not going to spoil it, but he mentioned where he's staying on the last podcast. So I think he's staying right there next to Sloan Park, and I'm staying pretty close myself. So that's going to be home base for everyone. It's not any particular reason except the rates are better in that area. For whatever, it's a great park too. I'll say I am partial to Scottsdale Stadium because it is so easy to get from one spot to the other in that park. It's not really big. If you want to go from one side of the first baseline to the third baseline, it's quick. There's no, you know, you want to go up the stairs or around or anything like that. And there's a certain joy in hearing the great Tony Rigsby get more and more annoyed by the kids on the berm every single game. You'll have every so often there'll be an announcement, please get off the berm while game, and as the game goes on he will get more and more agitated because those kids will not get off the berm, and it's pretty hilarious. Not least of which too is because Tony Rigsby, for people who don't know him, is the PA voice of the Durham Bulls. And he is, you know, the closest thing the minor leagues have to Bob Shepard from the old Yankee Stadium. He is truly the voice of God. I remember sitting on the Surprise backfield. I think it was Surprise backfield one day. Surprise backfield one day. No.
He does Surprise during spring training. So maybe would that have been where you heard him?
It was. And I could hear him from the big stadium. And I was like, you know what? I'm in Arizona, but I'm also in Durham at once. This is really cool just to be able to hear his voice, you know, announcing Bobby Witt Jr.'s name or whoever it was at the time. I will kick it back to Jeff here. Jeff, you've only been to one Fall League. What was your favorite park?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I mean, at this point, I've been to all those parks. I haven't been to Sloan, actually. I haven't been to Mesa. I've been everywhere else. I got like half a game in Peoria. So I don't really have much of a gauge on those. But I guess the other four parks I went to multiple times. And I think, honestly, for me at this point, like a lot of it is just experiences. Like I had the opportunity at Surprise. Like I went for, you know, BP. And I ran into Bill for the first time. And like we sat down and watched it. I like Surprise for a few reasons. I don't love the camera angle because you're so up high. Like it's that's not necessarily great if you're trying to shoot, you know, video behind home plate. So don't love it for that. But you have an overhang. So you could actually go to a game there and be, you know, a pasty white East Coaster like myself and take in a day game and not get completely cooked because they have that overhang there. So that's one thing that I noticed. I also sort of like the facilities. It's easy in, easy out, plenty of parking. You know, that was just a nice background as well. Plus they have the cactuses out in center field, which I think is kind of a cool touch with that park. So that one I think is just a nice sort of game experience. Like if I was going to take my kids to a game, I think I'd probably go to Surprise. I'm crazy. I really enjoyed Camelback. I think the backdrop is really cool. The colors and the touches in the stadium and how that sort of tied into Dodger Stadium a little bit, having my first Dodger Stadium experience this summer. I could kind of see some of the parallels between the two. It is a really tough park to take a day game in. I had that experience, but I would say that it might be my favorite park for a night game. It was really nice. You can get really close. It's a great camera angle. I want to say it was maybe one of my best pitching backdrops that I shot on. I got to see a lot of good pitching performances there. It's just a really nice park. I was also the closest to the hotel that I was staying at. So there was some convenience there. I thought that was a really nice park. I know that there's not a lot of overhanging, not a lot of protection. I thought Scottsdale was really nice for the reasons that you mentioned. I also thought that just the facade of the park was really beautiful. The brick facade there, where it was sort of nestled into the middle of the town, and probably one of the really, you know, the nicest parts of that area is that downtown Scottsdale area. It's nice to walk around. There was good parking. I had some friends that are scouts that showed me some of the tricks to park over at Scottsdale. So that was really nice. And then I thought, you know, like just overall, like nicest ballpark was probably Salt River, where I got back-to-back days there, the second of which being the Fall Stars game. That's a really nice park, a really nice backdrop. And it's wide open. You know, I think there's pretty good sight lines there too. Plenty of parking. I think the outside of it, like walking into the stadium, was probably like the prettiest walk up of any park, which is always something I try to, you know, keep in my mind, especially considering I judge them against the Cape Parks and some of those things like Fenway. It has some great walk ups to those parks. So yeah, I think, you know, going through it each, I don't have a favorite so much yet. I'm going to, you know, hold that maybe until the end of this year, where I can see a few of the other parks. And like I said, I'm going to be right there in Mesa. So I'm going to see those games a little bit more and be able to visit. Because the week I was out there, there were no games at Mesa.
So you kind of hinted at it a little bit, Bill. You know, besides the fall league, you are, you know, you live full time in Arizona. So you get extended spring training and big league spring training and the Arizona Complex League. And right now you get the instructional league. So I know it's early. It's much earlier than it has been, I believe, in previous years. There was a bit of a bridge league into instructs this year. Who stuck out for you so far this year on the backfields in instructional league?
I've been at the Dodgers complex quite a bit because they're playing a lot of games. And we've talked a lot about the Dodgers, their ability to find pitching and develop pitching. And like every day it's five pitchers and maybe some you've never heard of. They also have brought up some interesting players from the DSL. The one that's standing out is Josue De Paula, who was on the hot sheet last week. And I actually talked to his outfield coach last week when I was at a game and said, yeah, he's raw. He's got a lot to learn, but he likes to learn and he's a good kid. So that's a name. But it was a game about a week ago I was at, and 17th round pick Peyton Martin out of North Carolina High School, who barely pitched in high school from what we understand. He came out throwing 95 miles per hour right away with a swagger on the mound. Like, how did this kid drop to the 17th round? We couldn't believe it. There were a lot of scouts there that day. And as soon as he starts warming up, they're jumping up with their video cameras to get around and to see him. And he's just one of many there. The Dodgers, you know, really are doing a good job in pitching development. So that's been a real treat. It has been an interesting year. You call it Bridge League, Transitional League. Everyone's doing something a little different because Arizona League ended on August 23rd, but the full season leagues were still going on. A-ball just ended a week ago. I think Double A just ended this week. Organizations wanted to keep players hot in case they needed to send somebody up to A-ball. So that's why some teams are treating it as Bridge League or Transitional League. The Giants were doing that, and they've already shut down Instructional League. To me, I just call it Instructional League because as long as they're playing games and there's players out there this time of year, it's Instructional League. There's some that haven't even started yet. Angels start this week. Cubs have just started. They're only doing intra-squad games. So every day there's a choice of where to go. Sure. Lots of baseball.
For sure. You know, there's I'm going to be out there early with the purpose of getting a little bit of Instructional League. You mentioned the surprise sites. I'm fairly certain I know I'm going to be there on one of those days because I want to go see Anthony Gutierrez. You know, he's gotten a lot of hype, and I want to get a little bit of video of him. Not necessarily to see if he's real or not, because, you know, it'll be one game. Who knows? But that will be really fun. And some of my favorite baseball is on the backfield because there's even fewer fans than the fall league. It's the more intimate atmosphere. It's just baseball. There's no fireworks. There's no mascots. There's no between inning games or anything like that. Not that those things are bad, but it's just kind of the purest form of minor league baseball there is. And, you know, part of the fun of this job is to see guys before they're really guys, before they're famous, to get, you know, to get in on the ground floor of Apple before it becomes Apple and things like that. And the best place to do that outside of maybe like tryout camps or high school or things like that is the Arizona League and the Gulf Coast League. And it's like, you got some data to that, Bill?
Yes, I do, because I have another name. Assuming that, and I don't remember how late they're playing into the season, but if the Guardians have two teams, and if they're still playing when you get here, I have a name that will be music to your ears, and that's Churio. But it's not Jackson Churio. It's his younger brother, Jason Churio. And he's looked really good for me. Now, you know, is he going to make the big leap like Jackson did? Probably not. But he's still an interesting prospect. He's got physicality already for his age. So that's certainly one you should, if the Guardians are still playing when you get here, you need to put on your list, because I know how you'd love to hear and talk about the Churio family.
It's funny. There's those two guys that are the Churios, but I was shocker, you guys. I was looking up Jackson Churio's stats this morning. There are a ton of players with that last name. There are at least 18 of them roaming the minors right now, if I remember correctly. I don't think they're all related. This isn't a Wander Franco Wanderage situation, but there are a lot of Churios out there. But you're right. You know, I think whoever interviewed Jackson at this year's prospect pad talked about Jason. And if I remember correctly, Jackson said that Jason is a better hitter, but has less power at this point. And if you tell me he's a better, I know that this is probably some brotherly love, but if you tell me there's a better hitter same last name as Jackson Churio right now, well, you're right. I do want to see him. And if they're still playing out that when I get out there, cool. If not, you know, he'll probably be at Lynchburg next year, and I'll get him at some point in the Carolina League. I think Jeff, you know, you got some backfield time in spring training too. Do you like the backfield as much as Bill and I do?
Yeah. I'm not sure that I necessarily saw backfields that were as littered with decorated talent at the level that you guys probably saw in Arizona last year. But my area of East Coast of Florida got a little bit better with some of the Washington Nationals acquisitions over the trade deadline. So that should be a lot better. You know, certainly, you know, I saw so many great talents in the Cardinals system, and, you know, you get an early look on some of the adjustments that maybe some name brand players have made. You know, one of them primarily was Mason Wynn. You know, that's where I saw Gordon Graceffo hit 100 miles per hour, which sort of continued to build the legend of Graceffo from, you know, the guy that I saw with Villanova to the guy in the Cape to then the guy in the following spring training that, you know, had added nearly 10 miles per hour of velocity onto his max pitch. But I love it. Yeah, I really like any sort of game setup like that where you get to see, you know, a wide variety of talent at a really sort of early stage in their development, you know, versus the more advanced baseball that I see in AA and AAA a majority of the year. You know, it's good to get that compare and contrast because you kind of appreciate some of the things that are being done, particularly defensively at the higher levels in just terms of execution, you know, of just, you know, infield outs and, you know, fly balls, those sort of things that you maybe don't take for granted when you're watching backfields or amateur level sort of stuff.
For sure. I mean, and I think, you know, you got to see Yuri and guys like that who were brand names at this point, and that's fun. But the best feeling, I think, in this little niche industry that we have is seeing that guy before he's that guy and kind of thinking to yourself, what am I looking at? And then being really excited. And if you're anything like me, you think about it on the entire drive back to the hotel. Like, what did I just see? This, whoever this is, might be special. And I'm excited to follow his career and write up about him. And sometimes he is, and sometimes he isn't. And sometimes it's just finding a guy who might not be, you know, Chori or anything like that, but a big leaguer. Like, one of my favorites is a couple of years ago in the Rangers backfield, seeing John King hitting 97 and saying, oh, I have no idea who this is, but I think this is a big leaguer. Same idea with Camilo Duvall way few years ago when he wasn't much of anything outside of a guy who threw hard, and you see him on the Giants backfield and you think, okay, there's something right there. That's pretty cool. So it's fun seeing, like, I'm going to see probably Grayson Rodriguez this week. That's cool. But I would much rather see a guy who is going to be Grayson Rodriguez in a few years and maybe be the on the ground floor of that. And I will use that little hint to segue. I just kind of let the cat out of the bag. Unless they make a move with him, I'm going to see Grayson Rodriguez because Durham season here is closing with a regular season tilt against Norfolk. So that's Grayson Rodriguez. That's Colton Cowser. That's Joey Ortiz. That should be really fun. Jeff, what are you doing this week? I don't know what more is left in your neck of the woods. I mean, Somerset and Portland are in the playoffs. I don't know if you're going to see any of those guys.
Yeah,
two pretty loaded rosters.
Portland's a few hours away. That would be a bit of a drive. But yeah, I mean, New Hampshire's done. Hartford's done. There's some Worcester games over the next week or so. Syracuse is in town, which is the Mets AAA affiliate. I guess there could be some excitement there because that's Francisco Alvarez, correct? So, you know, I could see Alvarez again, but we'll see, you know, we'll see. We'll see how often I get out to the park this week. I'll be working on some other stuff as well. We're in handbook season. I got some calls for Blue Jays, which is, you know, the deadline for that is rapidly approaching. I'll be watching a lot of games, writing up my last best pitches article. So that's kind of where my attention's at this week, but I do have a couple of weeks left at the AAA. So depending upon kids' schedule and games and that sort of thing, I'll be trying to get out there. But once it hits, like once football season starts for my kids, man, I'm pretty much like fighting against them and my wife to get to the park.
Those monsters. Bill, I'll ask you the same question. You know, I know you're usually on the backfield pretty much every day. I'm pretty sure you're going there as soon as we're done with this podcast, or maybe not as soon, but you're usually hunting down some white whales of yours. Who are you going to look for this week on the Phoenix backfields?
Well, I I kind of make my decisions at the last minute. In order to share information, we set up a private WhatsApp group for scouts. And when we get lineups and game times, we post them. And this is not for today, but I just got one here as I'm looking at my phone. First Cubs interest squad will be 11 a.m. Wednesday. So now I know what I'm doing at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Closer, I'm going out to Goodyear today because both the Reds and Guardians are at home. So there's two games a quarter of a mile apart. Last week when they were doing that, they staggered the start times by an hour, which made it nice. Today, I think they're both starting at 2 o'clock, and I'm just waiting to get lineups to see where I want to start. I know the Guardians' ninth round pick is making his first outing, a pitcher from Connecticut. Maybe Jeff knows more about him, and I wish I could tell you his name right now, but he's pitching today. But I'm waiting especially to get the Reds lineup because they have a stacked roster now that the full season guys are coming in. Last week I saw Trey Faltine, Justin Boyd, and sitting on the bench waiting to play. And another day was Cam Collier, Sal Stewart, Austin Hendrick, and Jay Allen. So I'm hoping to see some of those guys today.
As I've said before, Bill, I didn't know if it's possible, but you are living my best life. I am so very envious of everything that you get to do as far as backfield life, minus the heat part during the summer. It does get hot around here, and we debate heat, dry heat versus humidity. Either way, it's uncomfortable, but you know, seeing those guys come through those complexes all year long is really, really cool. And I think this is a good place to wrap it up. Thank you very much, Bill, for your time today. Thank you, Jeff, for your time, for both those guys.
Thank you for having me.
For both those guys, I am Josh, and we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye.